In Indiana, summer means more than sunshine. It's hiking miles and miles of trails to magnificent views and cruising through caves on underground river rides. It's spending the night in a floating cabin and scuba diving into your next big adventure. It's riding a horse and buggy through historic towns and camping with elephants at a wildlife park. It's anything but ordinary. Plan your trip at inindiana.com/summer.
Hey everybody, welcome back to the Grey Mulligan Lane podcast, where queer friends and allies gather to review and discuss the original X-Men comics in continuity order. We are here to record my favorite episode of the month. This is exciting. It's May 4th, it's Star Wars Day, and I got to record my two favorite episodes of the month, both on the same day. This morning was our X-Men script reading, which won't come out till July, but today we get to record the trial of Jamie Madrox, the Multiple Man, a character that I really enjoy. We're gonna have a blast today. This episode will come out at the end of May 2025. I am so happy to be joined by some of my very favorite nerdy friends and people. Some of us have like this group chat going that we've been having for like several months now, and we've been talking about Jamie for months and months, and this feels like I've been working on this episode since like last October, so it's really fun to finally be recording this today. Before I welcome my jury, let me give a little bit of a preamble. Jamie Madrox is an ordinary guy. He's an only child. Listen to the narration given about him in his very first appearance in Giant Size Fantastic Four number 4, which has a full episode on my show. He was christened James Arthur Madrox, son of Daniel and Joan, born September 7th, 1953. He was a handsome baby, but from the first it was obvious that he was also rather different. 2 weeks later, Dr. Daniel Madrox resigned from the Los Alamos Nuclear Research Center and moved to Kansas. The academic world never heard from him again. It hardly noticed. The Madrox farm was isolated intentionally, and Jamie grew up without any friends save his parents. Jamie wondered about his strange suit, asked about it. "When you're older," your father would tell him, "when you're older, I'll tell you, and perhaps you'll understand." But Daniel Madrox never really had the chance to offer explanations. A freak tornado swept across the farm one humid July afternoon. When the storm had passed, Jamie Madrox was an orphan. Jamie was 15 when his parents died. The next 6 years passed quickly. Jamie didn't really like living alone, but he got used to it. During this narration, we get a classic image. Jamie's born, the doctor holds him upside down by his feet and slaps the baby's bottom, customary in the 1950s, apparently, and suddenly the doctor was holding two babies. I just wish they'd included a panel of both babies peeing on the doctor. That's my fondest wish for this issue. Jamie is a mutant who duplicates himself. On the cover of the same issue, we are introduced to Madrox, the Multiple Menace. Six identical men in bright green body armor, covered in yellow dots and lines, are attacking the Fantastic Four. His suit looks like those old videos about cell division from the sixth grade science class. One cell splits into two, those into four, then eight, with a little gloop sound effect. See? Just an ordinary guy who grew up lonely on a farm with only himself to talk to. But like any ordinary guy, like any human at all, Jamie contains multitudes. Ladies and gentlemen, we proudly welcome you to Grey Malkin Lane's Trial of Jamie Madrox, the Multiple Man. Let me welcome each of my guests, five smart and hilarious friends here to join me in Jamie's trial. Let me have you each introduce yourselves. Let us know your pronouns. Tell us what you have most in common personally with Jamie Madrox. Hi, Philip. It's great to see you.
You too. Thank you for having me for my very first trial. My pronouns are he, him. I like having lots of options, especially when playing board games. Like, leave your options open for whatever strategy you need. But then when it comes time to actually make the decision, I struggle. All the options, but then the difficulty of making a decision is what I have in common with Jamie Madrox.
That makes me channel that like episode of Community where they're rolling a dice and like each dice roll like gives an alternate reality. Do you guys know the one I'm talking about? Like, do you get lost in the possibilities? Jamie gets to have all the possibilities. Philip, you only get one.
I know. It had such an impact on me when I first read those issues of X-Factor Investigations where he's like, well, I don't know. I'm just going to send my dupes off and then I'll reabsorb them so that way I can do all the things while also doing none of the things.
Let me also welcome the wonderful Matt Parent for their first trial on the show today. Hi, Matt.
Hello. Hi, I'm Matt Parent. I prefer they, them pronouns. I think the thing that I am most like Jamie Madrox in is that I talk to myself in a way that like is argumentative. Like I disagree with myself loudly and firmly.
Speaking of freak tornadoes, welcome to Scott Free.
Chad. thanks for having me back for my second trial. I was on the trial of Robert Drake. He, him, things that relate to with Jimmy Madrox, it's I don't shut the hell up and I have intense self-loathing. So
Scott is well known and associated with Jamie as a Jamie cosplayer. Scott is also the voice of Iceman in our script readings on the show this year, which is a ton of fun. Great to have you here. Let me also welcome my dear friend Daryl Lawrence, another person like Philip associated with Jamie for podcasting reasons.
Philip is my husband. I guess I'm the worst half of this couple. I use he, him pronouns. And I think after us covering all of X-Factor Investigations on our own podcast, that's a good chunk of stuff. And I think I most relate to Jamie being an only child and also just thinking that things should go according to how he wants them to. It needs to run the way I want it to run, and I don't want anyone else to be calling the shots.
Fully fair. And lastly, my dear friend, Martini the Multiple Menace. Hi, Demanda.
Hello, Demanda Martini. This is my second appearance today on Chad's show. I got to be a part of the recording earlier this morning.
As Lorna Dane.
I know, when she actually gets to become Polaris. So great. I use she, her pronouns. And it's like, I like being alone, but I also narrate everything that I do and also would still like an audience at all times. But another thing is when I go evil, I want to be evil in the most petty way possible, very much like Jamie Madrox's dupes.
Lastly, I'm Chad Anderson. I use he, him pronouns. Today's going to be mostly silly and sci-fi, but I'm going to get serious for just a moment to answer what I have most in common with Jamie. I remember having a conversation with a friend about a year before I came out, who was like trying to understand me. And I knew I was like a fully fractured person at that point. And I remember saying out loud to this friend, and it's something I later have explored in my writing. I'm like, there are five versions of me and no single person knows all five versions, or at least more than two. There's like the Mormon side and like the social worker side and the dad side and the nerd side. And then there's like the private side. And I remember after coming out, feeling like all those puzzle pieces came together. But Jamie's kind of an odd thing because I feel like I could have divided those five parts of me up and they would all be leading like very, very different lives now, you know, a few years later, which is a really interesting thing to consider. And that's one of the most fun parts about Jamie is what is the path taken versus not taken? And what does it mean? And what happens when you mix all those things back into the same person? I got to host the trial of the stranger. For those of you who listened, it was the most brain-hurty trial that I've ever hosted because it went so high concept. We got to go all sci-fi as we talked about the real psychological theory, terms like collective consciousness and collective unconsciousness. The stranger is a billion minds all joined together to form one massive being, sort of like the supreme intelligence or the eternal unimind. And I use multiple man as an example of this theory because we can take one consciousness, like this character, and split that consciousness into 10 different parts, which each carry a part of the whole. And we could do that into 100 or 1,000 because each person contains multitudes, which is what the interesting part of this character on a brain level is for me. These beings at the moment of their creation would be distinguished from the parts of them that are lacking as those traits are in another being entirely. And these 10 would then go on to develop very different from each other as they aged. Similarly, but distinctly different, 10 clones of the same person who had no variation in traits at the beginning would also age and develop differently based on the paths that they choose in their life. God, I'd love to hear your thoughts on this in a minute. I know you really like the character Ben Reilly, who is kind of that version of Peter Parker, like what happens if we take different paths. So which brings us to the first huge complication for Jamie Madrox, and we're going to jump right into the deep end, which is a conversation we had when we did the review of Giant Size Fantastic Four on the show. How do his powers work? And how they work often depends on the story. So theory number one, Jamie Prime is the original Jamie, and any dupes divided off of him are secondary to him, like an inferior copy that's ultimately beholden to the Prime unit. Like they're the worker drones to his queen bee. Under this theory, there are levels of dupeness. The host divides one off, who then can make his own dupes, which then makes its own dupes. A fourth generation dupe already, but Jamie Prime would still remain in charge. Also, according to this theory, there's an occasional mutant dupe, quote unquote, or a dupe that has like a stronger amount of will while still subject to the Prime unit, who has greater amounts of free will and a desire to chart his own path, be it good or evil. Theory number two, Jamie Prime is the original original Jamie, and any dupes are direct copies of him, fully viable duplicates of Jamie. There can be a whole bunch of Jamie primes running around all at once, but there's still only one prime, and the rest are direct copies of the prime. Now, according to this theory, there's still an occasional mutant dupe, quote unquote, who has some characteristics of Jamie heightened to a certain degree, and we occasionally get an evil Jamie. Theory number three seems to be Jamie Prime is still the original Jamie, and each dupe divided off of him is an aspect of Jamie, like a little piece of his overall consciousness, like Jamie's inner child as a dupe, Jamie's rebellious nature as a dupe, Jamie's secret desire to fuck the Dazzler as a dupe that now stalks the Dazzler, Jamie's Christian devotion as a dupe, Jamie's libido as a dupe, Jamie's suicidal tendencies as a dupe, Jamie's nasty boy side as a dupe. And yes, these are all references to real stories. In this theory, one of two things happens. Either the aspect is removed from Jamie Prime during the time when the dupe is created, so like the libido divides off and Jamie Prime no longer has it, or it's just a copy of the libido given in a specific characteristic form in the dupe, like a fully realized aspect of that in one person. All of these are used at different times in Jamie's history, but I hope your head hurts just a little bit already, because we have to jump into the power part in order to understand this character at all. So if we lean into the complication of this, what if all three stories are true? What if Jamie's powers work in wildly different ways? What if the original dupe dies and a different dupe then becomes the original? So we got to talk about his powers and like what this does in your brain before we begin.
I would actually use Ben Reilly as a count, as like he is a clone in the sense he is a duplicate of Peter Parker, but he is split off at a very distinct time, and Peter just can't reabsorb Ben Reilly. So Ben exists as his own separate entity. Jamie ultimately, at the end of the day, can reabsorb any of his dupes. So despite how much free will they might have, or how writers play with their independence or abilities, at the end of the day, he is sort of the queen bee who can, you know, control the hive and reabsorb them. So I would say that's a very big distinction. Whereas at the end of the day, like Jamie is the world around which his dupes revolve, which has good and bad impacts on his ego. Yeah.
Which is also interesting too. I didn't even include this in the theories, but are Jamie's powers determined on his own mental health? So during a time of high self-confidence, he has more control, but during a time of depression, he has less control. Also, we've mentioned Queen Bee twice. I want to see Jamie Madrox like doing the full single ladies video with his dupes just all by himself now. Just a random thought I'm going to toss out there.
Obviously, all of these have been true in individual stories, but I really like think about like Rogue during Krakoa, or like right before Krakoa, where she has full control over this power that has been like her curse, right? She can basically touch Gambit and do all of these things with her powers because she's become more connected to them. She's more confident in her abilities. I think that it's exactly what you're saying, that as Jamie is more confident in who he is, he has more control over the kinds of dupes that are formed. I think in Krakoa especially, you see Madrox at the like height of his like confidence that he's ever maybe had, and he has like a workforce. Like there really are only a couple of like, and they're in the, like the Jason Lowe wrote a couple of stories about rogue dupes here. I think a rogue dupe is also just like part of the power. I think maybe that just happens like through law of large numbers. But in X-Factor Investigations, we see the most unconfident Jamie that we've ever seen. We see a Jamie who can't make a decision and can't and is like completely at odds with himself. So his powers are as bad as they've ever been, right? He creates John Maddox and he creates Agent Madrox and he creates the fly in the ointment or the X-Factor, the like the evil, like chaotic Jamie. These are all, you can feel it as you are mentally unwell, your abilities, like your skills just become worse. I think that is close, the closest we can really arrive at an answer for how Jamie's powers really work.
It's interesting to compare this one to other powers that are completely different but work similarly. Rogue, for example, absorbing the memories of other people and having them overwhelm. If Jamie's constantly bringing in the memories of these other lives that he lived but also never lived, does it fuck with his brain psychologically? I think of the character Prodigy as another example, like who kind of just absorbs the skills of people around him and can channel certain ones, but can also get very overwhelmed and lose himself in the mess. What are your thoughts on Jamie's psychology as explored by Peter David, perhaps?
That's a good question. I think that Peter David has the ability to write this character very well. And I think if we're talking about power, powers, we're always going to be returning to what Peter David did with the character. And I think that Peter David is very cerebral in his approach to the character and how it impacts Jamie Prime, or how Jamie Prime impacts his dudes. Because if you look at that first appearance, which I was on that episode, and you have Claremont writing Jamie Madrox, it's carbon copies. It is running them off of the mimeograph machine back then in 75, just having multiple men. He spawns the exact same thing. Peter David really elevated it and added in that psychological element where you're looking at what is his headspace? What is his goal? Can he control that even? If he's like, I need to spawn someone to go do something, does he have a choice in which one comes out of him when he claps his hands? Or is it luck of the draw? And he's like, well, I guess that one's going off to NASA now. It's not fully answered because I think it's best left unanswered as a storytelling device. There is more power in the randomness of it than having set rules for the power.
Who among us does not enjoy multiple men? Just general question for my listening audience. But let me lob this one to Philip. We also have the idea more recently of like Krakoan resurrection. You have to like be backed up at a certain point or you lose the person that you were for that time. We see stories where Jamie will get the skills, but also where his dupes will experience things and die before reabsorption.
The idea that Jamie, their prime Jamie, is the only one that can reabsorb. Jamie's powers really seem to be the embodiment of the, what if I did this? Having all the options open. So when he creates a whole bunch of dupes, his dupes still have the same core memory identity, like everything leading up to that point. But then there are certain, I guess, dials that mutate in a different way. Like if one of us is in an experience, we can be like, well, what if we did this? What if we did that? No, I'm actually going to choose this other option. His dupes all get to experience the, what if I did this? What if I did that? Oh, there's a bomb here. What if I just set it off and that's how I rescue the team? That's where I sort of land on it of like, it's him, but the dials can be changed a little bit of like, that thought of what if gets to live, gets to go off and do its full realization.
I think of Jamie a little bit like Gumby, who like divides himself up into different pieces, right? But really he's kind of a living choose your own adventure book, which is interesting. Like all of the paths taken, but reabsorbed, and then you hope for the right path moving forward. We've also seen this power set explored really viscerally in a few mediums in recent years. If you guys are watching the Invincible cartoon with like Duplicate and Multipaul, who like their dupes are used as like cannon fodder, basically. They're just getting blown apart. More uncomfortably, the character Doppelganger from The Boys, who all get pink eye from eating their own ass in a giant like sex line. It's very uncomfortable. Amanda, the most important question thus far. You're doing one of your X-Treats episodes. What dessert do you make to represent Jamie Madrox? And what are your favorite and least favorite costumes of his?
So, before we get into that, while my brain in the background answers those questions, two things that I wanted to piggyback on are just like Rogue, Celine also has a similar power where she absorbs everyone's memory. And she made it very clear in that time that she fought Rachel that she remembers everything that that person did. And because she's so ancient, she like has, I'm assuming, some sort of catalog of all of the people that she's ever absorbed ever, but their personality never takes over like Rogue's can, which is an interesting aspect to her powers. And I find it very interesting, you know, we were talking about how Jamie Prime seems to be the only person who can reabsorb dupes, but again, those memories, much like Celine, like that. So when Jamie is bad, for example, when there's a bad Jamie, it's sort of like, hey, buddy, what's your end game if you can't absorb Prime Jamie and like be the personality that's like then the dominant one? How do you expect to win here? Like, that's an interesting sort of idea that I don't think has ever really been explored when he has like sort of like the bad clone. I think the bad dupe just wants to kill Jamie Prime instead of like, I want to reabsorb you and then I'm going to be the dominant personality, maybe subconsciously knowing that that's not something that they can do. Another, when you were talking about like other characters, one of my favorite Legion of Superhero characters is Triplicate Girl, and who then historically and famously became Duo Damsel because one of her duplicates was killed. And there, her alien physiology, it's the same person, just split into three. Martial arts that they learn is called Trijitsu, because it's like the mastery of splitting myself into three people, but being able to coordinate almost telepathically of what each duplicate is going to be able to do in order to fight in the DC universe. There's also another version of her powers where her name is Una, and she is the one. Everyone else on the entire planet is just one of her duplicates. And there's like 1,000 billion of them or whatever.
Which gives me Impossible Man energy. And I hate the Impossible Man.
Right. So it's just interesting that like there's across multiple media, there's all of these different characters who have a similar power. And it seems like they explore similar storylines. I think the X treat for Multiple Man, I think would be a cream puff because you can make multiple of them. And also a cream puff is mostly air and then you fill it with cream. Like that just seems very Jamie. Like he's mostly just sort of full of air. He's not that smart, but also still tasty. You're glad that he's here. You're glad that there's a lot of him. And his my favorite look of Jamie's, I think, is like the 90s X Factor. I think it's just sort of like an iconic look. It tried to like make him a little more stylized over like his original green. I liked that version better. And then, you know, who doesn't love a duster jacket? I mean, you know, it was the 90s. Everyone was doing it. Also, I love that Jamie was like, do you know what's going to make me cool? I saw that guy Gambit on Muir Island. I'm going to wear this jacket.
And also a head condom, but he had it first.
So another character that sort of springs to mind where there are different versions is Mannequin from Alpha Flight, who came out in like 1985-ish or so. I'd have to check. But the editorial response when Mannequin was around is, ooh, that's a choice that you're making, Bill Mantlo, for writing a character. And for those who don't know Mannequin, I don't know how you won't, but if you don't know Mannequin, he can summon three versions of himself from different time frames. So there's a protoplasm one, there's a caveman one, and then there's a futuristic one called Highbrow. So you have Proto, Ape Man, and Highbrow. So I see Peter David in 91 taking this character on and saying, okay, I see what Mantlo did. Editorial didn't really care for what he did in splitting off personalities, and you can see it sort of as a slow burn. He's playing around with different things as he takes on the X-Factor title and slowly gets to where we are within X-Factor Investigations. It took him years to develop some of those aspects of Mad Rocks that we now recognize as standard.
Scott, does it fuck with your head a little bit when I talk about the Jamie design being like the Cell Division video from like the 1950s science classes?
No, I think it's pretty accurate in down to the design being like that. Part of the reason why it's called Mad Rocks is Claremont and Len Wein wanted to call him Xerox. Editorial was rightly like, no, we're going to get sued. We're going to use sort of a name that's really like similar, because this was the era of like, wow, you can get like a copy machine and you can make duplicates of things and it's the 70s and crap like that. So
interesting. Okay, we're gonna stay focused on his powers for a minute. When Jamie dupes, he creates an exact dupe. So if Jamie has a cold, his dupe should have a cold. If he's wearing a blue suit and a pink tie and eating a Rocky Road ice cream and wearing Ray-Bans and he has his house keys in his pocket and his wallet with like $3.27 in it, and he's holding a bag of groceries, and he creates 20 dupes, and each one of them is wearing the same blue suit with pink tie, eating Rocky Road ice cream and wearing Ray-Bans, and has a copy of the house keys in his pocket and a wallet with $3.27 in it and a bag of groceries. And each Rocky Road ice cream is a copy of the original. Each egg in the grocery bag is a copy of the original egg. The dollar bills will all have the same serial numbers on them. When Jamie reabsorbs the clones, he reabsorbs all that extra material, which is also created when he dupes. And the handbook guys back in the 80s, I'm surprised they didn't give like some dimension that he like draws his like dupe energy from, because they always do weird shit like that when they're exploring these characters. Like Giant Man has to like transfer his mass to the cosmos dimension, like that kind of stuff. At a certain point, Peter David gets very creative with Jamie's powers, and it's really fun if occasionally problematic and misogynistic. Jamie stays at home, he creates a bunch of dupes to go like live life experiences, then he reabsorbs them and he now has their skills and memories, sort of like Prodigy that I mentioned before. He can speak other languages, he's a tech genius, scientist, monk, writer, priest. He learns how to absorb his dupes from farther away, but if one dies, he loses that one's memories. In the mid-90s, Jamie got a signature move for a while, where he like puts his hand inside a monster, like claps, and then like grows a dupe inside the monster and lets it explode. Then in the early 2000s, we meet Damien Tripp. This guy is old and also young, and also he maybe murdered Jamie's parents with a tornado, and also he can alter your memory. memories, and he calls himself a Killcrop, which is like an evolutionary category of mutants, sort of like the Neo or like the Externals, or, you know, like Azazel's demon race, the Neophim or whatever they're called. And it just kind of doesn't matter a little bit in the end of it all, but that Trip story plays out over a long period of time in X-Factor.
Damian Trip is, I would see Killcrop as like a classification, like almost like the power structure, like in Omega almost, except the mutant powers develop early before adolescence and all that. But the real significance of it isn't always fully explored, I feel, in X-Factor Investigations. We know that Trip was
the word Killcrop really quickly is like a word from mythology that talks about like a demon baby, like a fairy child, or like a kid getting replaced by a changeling and having like altered powers. It's an interesting theory.
So I think the payoff for it is something like when he's murdered in pretty drastic ways, he sort of hops dimensions. The prime consciousness hops dimensions. Like I can't hold a candle to Scott Free's cosplaying of Madrox. But the one I do is he's in another dimension where he's an apprentice of Doctor Strange. So he's got like the full cloak that Daryl made really well, and the suit and the sash and the boots and all that. Having like that Killcrop, not only is it that you have powers when you're newly minted as a baby, but also there's like a hidden other dimension to it that sort of like keeps you going. And we know that Damian Trip is really hard to kill. And there was one explosion that got rid of the middle-aged one, sort of like a maiden mother crone for witches. That one dupe took out the middle-aged Trip. But we know that the aged Trip is the one that hung around the most and haunted Layla. And
it's a complicated story. It's really messy, actually. It's one of those that hurts your head a little bit, but I kind of like those sometimes.
Yeah, but at least it gives another sort of language to talk about powers other than like the scale and omega-ness of it all. You get to go right from the get-go, have your powers, and then like have some other sneaky element to them that you never would have thought of before. So hopping dimensions, seeing these other lives, like taking your power to the nth degree. Not only do you get to experience other lives in your current plane of existence, but you get to go off in all these other ones, and your person gets to go over there and see what that life was like.
It's the theory of alternate dimension. You get to see what choice your character made in a different world and how they reacted, which we get to see in like one of the most obnoxious comic book forms when we have like the Council of Cross Time Kangs or some shit like that. Jamie's like that all the time, which is fun.
He's holding an ice cream cone. Every one of them is going to be holding an ice cream cone. It's the exact same ice cream cone. He is creating matter. It's one of the the X-Men is a science fiction franchise, and you try not to ask those kind of questions. And oddly, Jamie might as well be an Omega level mutant, because we very rarely deal with like the limitations of his powers. He has a narrative limitation, which is that eventually there's too many guys, and eventually too many guys will have an asshole, right? Like and the thing that's fun about that, the thing that's fun about eventually one of those guys will be an asshole is,
but also every one of those guys has a duplicate of Jamie's asshole.
that's absolutely true. But once you've made an evil dupe, that evil dupe duplicating makes evil dupes, right? Like I believe that's kind of what's happening in the end of Dazzler by Jason Lowe, right? That evil dupe has gone off, and the dupes that he's wearing are all wearing his dumb like fringe vest, and they're all bad guys. They're all like sold on what his idea is. So that's his real limitation, right? Is that rogue dupe. It's almost like that's the thing that stops him from being all powerful.
Interesting. Okay, we're going to keep focused on this. And this next point, I think, is something we've got to consider a little bit in preparation for the trial, is how much does Jamie have control versus the dupes? Like, that's one of the questions we're going to be fundamentally asking in the prosecution part. So Jamie has all kinds of dupes. There are evil dupes. There's the dupes at the very beginning that Professor X rendered brain dead in that first appearance. There's the dupe that Proteus killed. There's the dupe from Fallen Angels, who later joined the Nasty Boys and went full supervillain for a while. There's the dupe that married Sheila DeSoto in Chicago and then got murdered by that lame duplicating assassin Clay. His name is Clay. The dupe that lived in Russia for 18 months. The dupe that became a S.H.I.E.L.D. agent. The dupe that fathered a child with Siren, except the child was a dupe and got reabsorbed immediately after its birth in that story, that baby, you know, baby Sean. There's the Cortex dupe, which we'll be talking about later. That's a complicated one. There's the dupe that fully got turned into a demon. There's the dupe that worked as a scoutmaster for a year. The dupe that becomes a preacher, John Maddox, who's gone on to have a very separate and independent life from Jamie, who also has his own wife and his own child. There's all the dupes that died from Mpox. There's the dupe that is named Matt Rocks, the Hollywood entertainment lawyer. There's a whole alternate reality where each Jamie dupe had its own superpowers. Like there was a Hulk dupe and a Deadpool dupe, and like they're all serving Emperor Madrox in that one world. In the Age of Apocalypse, Jamie is like the Madri. They're all like these mindless dupes that are like priests for Apocalypse. There's the dupe that stalked Dazzler. There's also Captain Madrox, who became a space pirate and I think is in a Shi'ar jail now. There are lots of dupes out there, and I didn't even cover them all comprehensively. Who are your favorite or least favorite dupes?
I mean, just for like sort of iconic status, I gotta go with the Nasty Boy dupe, simply for the punching Jamie Prime with the Kermit puppet, and he's doing like the voice and he jumps out from, but it's great, and I'm gonna try to bring a Kermit puppet to the Uncanny experience. I would also say Jason's a Captain Madrox, the space pirate, was also hilarious. The whole casino bit where one of them learns how to gamble and to bet against Guido, it's perfect.
My favorite dupe, I think for sheer like drama soap opera, is Baby Sean dupe, who gets reabsorbed. Like, it's such a crazy thing, and I talked about it in my Siren X-Treats video, but Peter David's wife, Kath, she and I had met at Farpoint, and we discussed, and like, they were just talking over dinner, and she was like, oh, but what if the baby's a dupe? Because they had to, quote-unquote, get rid of the baby, because they weren't allowed to have any more mutants, you know, because of the M-Day mandate. And I'm like, that is absolutely insane, and I love that, because it's also like, it's his signature move of like putting his fist into a monster and like creating a dupe, but it's like he put his penis inside Siren and created a dupe, and it also, it's like, how much control did he subconsciously have over that to allow that baby to grow like a baby?
Oh my god, does kinetic impact during sex create dupes? That's so uncomfortable.
but like, so like, that's the thing, it's like, how much control does he really have? It's kind of like what I was talking about earlier too, where how much control can he have if he's always going to be the prime personality, but when he creates these rogue dupes, then what's the end game if they kind of subconsciously know that they're not going to be the prime, like the prime personality, if they get reabsorbed? In the AOA, I feel like something with Sinister and Dark Beast mess with his genetic, like whatever his genetics are, because obviously they did. The Magi are like those mindless sort of cannon fodder foot soldiers, like priests or whatever. And with killing Prime, Jamie did kill all of the dupes. And I guess it's, in theory, would that be a thing? And again, bringing up with evil dupes, if you kill Prime Jamie, does that kill all dupes? Because like we've thought that Prime Jamie has been killed before, but we then find out, no, it was a dupe. It was all a dream. Is that how his powers work? He's created these independent living things, but if he were to die because they are a part of his living, quote unquote, essence, would they then also die? Anyway, crazy. Now my brain hurts. I'm done talking.
I really like John Maddox. I think that it's a representation of how Madrox can spawn a dupe and it can become independent. And then there are the complications of, how is there a baby?
So I want to say something that is maybe controversial. That baby's not a dupe. That baby can't be a dupe. Jamie has never made a dupe that's not just a clone of Jamie Madrox. If he put a dupe inside of Siren, it would explode
like Mellencamp.
She would. So I'm not saying he can't absorb it. I'm saying she gave birth to something. That is half her. He just ate it.
We need a story where little Sean Madrox comes back. I think it has to make sense somewhere, but it's really funny. And I remember the narrative like choice, like reading that as a fan. I'm like, holy shit, what did they just do? Because there's such a build up.
Insane.
Okay, we're going to recount Jamie's entire comic book history very briefly. He has less than 400 appearances, which might surprise you. He first takes a job on Muir Island, and he doesn't ever really get any exploration as a character until that 8-issue Fallen Angels series, which is many years later. Especially Peter David brings him into the New Government X-Factor, and then he really starts to explore the complexity of Jamie's powers. His simple seriousness, his dark depression, his inner demons, his like zany sense of humor, his ordinariness. Jamie dies of the Legacy Virus in his own Mahapralaya with the Haven storyline, but he's later back where he joins X-Corps, and then David picks him up again in Madrox and the subsequent X-Factor Investigation series, where Jamie is the hero, the focal character, the leader of the team. He also gets super hot during this era. His powers are pushed to a much higher limit. He's a dud, a womanizer, a dumbass, a bold superhero who constantly has to learn lessons about himself in this complicated world. And you want to know something crazy? There are like 120 issues of X-Factor Investigations when you add them all up. Jamie sleeps with multiple teammates. He lets dupes live their own lives. He gets branded with an M over one of his eyes in the future, which is now a thing that goes on all of his dupes. He ends up getting married to Layla Miller in a Vegas ceremony, and he has fathered a child with her named Davey. On Krakoa, he's back to being on X-Corp. He's the worker drone who occasionally gets a space adventure written by Jason Lowe, but he's still managing all the crazy dupes that exist out there. And again, that's way oversimplified. But in his first appearance, and this is the story that I want to write, Charles shuts down all the minds of Jamie's dupes, but we also get key that Charles was involved in Jamie's early life and like the creation of the suit that Jamie wore. And I have a lot of fucking Professor X stories to write, but this is one that I would really like to tell. There's also some odd stories out there where the dupes get treated very weird. They just get kind of shut down and treated like cannon fodder. Just before Krakoa, Legion used Jamie's dupes to like download all of his personalities into, and they each got like a superpower and they were sent on missions to fight the X-Men. Sometimes when you knock out Jamie Prime, the other like dupes disappear. Sometimes they don't. I'm going to toss one of these to each of you and just like, I'd like to hear your comments, whatever comes to mind, on one of Jamie's key relationships. Scott, can I hear your thoughts on Jamie and Layla Miller? You knew I was going to do it to you.
Oh, wow. Yeah. Starting off strong. Layla is a very complicated character. She shows up as a child, and via some time travel shenanigans, she has knowledge from the future, and we'll get here later in the episode, but they eventually get married when she's significantly older. I am not a huge Layla Miller fan because she's very... I'm trying to think of how to put this politely. Annoying.
You don't have to be polite.
Okay. Yeah, she's annoying as hell. She's one of those characters who is a particular writer's pet character. She's Peter David's pet character, and no one since Peter David has been off of writing Jamie regularly has really known what to do with Layla, and her story sort of wraps up in X-Factor, and now she's just sort of there in the background as Jamie's wife, who's sometimes referenced, or in Krakoa we see her living at the Madrox family farm. She doesn't really want to have to deal with Krakoa. To me, she's sort of post X-Factor dead weight, and I don't know if Jamie would maybe be a little better off narrative-wise without Layla.
Let me hear your thoughts on Jamie and Strong Guy.
Oh, the buddies. I mean, I appreciate the best friends aspect of it and how they get into shenanigans together. They sort of have this, oh, you really bother me, but I can't not be your friend moment sometimes, where they just keep coming back together. I think the biggest fallout they had is during X-Factor Investigations with the Hell War on Earth aspect, where Strong Guy has no soul, so he just cuts ties with everyone, including Jamie.
Jamie's future wife literally took the soul from his best friend.
Well, she didn't take it. She brought him back to life, and you just happened to not come back.
She did not take it. That.
It's not like she ate it. I appreciate that even after that, they have come back together. I miss the issues where Strong Guy gets his soul back when he comes back from hell, ruling hell. But then, like the Jason Lowe stories where they're just like hang out on jet skis is super fun and fun, bro-y sitcom-y. And I really like that for Jamie and for Strong Guy. I think they're great.
Daryl, Jamie and Richter.
It's interesting how Jamie really helped Richter through a tough time at the beginning of X-Factor Investigations, and how he sort of assumed almost a mentorship role that, because it's Jamie, then it sort of dissolved into nothingness. But I think it showed that he has the capability of being a leader and showing care for the people on his team. And not only that, because Richter wasn't really on the team, scouting talent and recognizing it and being able to get someone through something so that they can contribute again and feel like they're a part of something, even though they may not have powers like Richter did then, that there is meaning without superpowers and everyone has the capability to contribute to a team setting.
But Jamie's also a little gay for Richter, and he's kind of uncomfortable with that. There's multiple scenes where he's like, oh, I'd do that. Oh, no, I was just kidding, guys.
No homo.
But one of his dupes definitely is.
At least one. Everybody's a little bi. Demander, what are your thoughts on Jamie and Valerie Cooper?
Well, first of all, Valerie doesn't like anyone, but she particularly does not like Jamie. But as a sort of, I wouldn't say Machiavellian, because she's not like a Mystique where it's like all about what she wants. She's a little more like, what's my objective as far as like work is Machiavellian, but like work in America motivated. Because it's always like, what's best for America, the government, yada, yada, yada. So she sees we can like build an entire army with this guy. Like he's useful, but getting to know him, she's like, I really would like to kill you at every single moment. So, I mean, Valerie also worked with Freedom Force, and I don't think she's ever yelled at anyone on Freedom Force the way that she does at Jamie. And I kind of love that. That Jamie is like a quote unquote good guy, but she's like, you are so annoying. I would like to kill you.
It's very like Marjorie Taylor Greene is already a little unhinged, but then she walks behind closed doors and just beats up an intern.
Yes. I love their relationship just because he definitely just like set something off with her.
And then finally, Matt, let me hear your thoughts on Jamie's relationship with Teresa Rourke Cassidy.
Long and short of it, she's way too good for him and she knows it. And I think that's actually very good for her for a time to be with someone that she's just way too good for. But he is so in his head and can't be there for a relationship that really should work. Like it really, it's the best thing he's ever gonna have, and he just like fucks it up at every step, and she's ready to forgive him until he eats that baby. He's so bad for her that I don't always feel comfortable with them on panel anymore. And literally later she sleeps with her ex-boyfriend Deadpool, and I'm like, that is in some ways a step up for you right now. Like that's how bad Jamie is for Tarek.
When Siren is drunk, she'll like flirt with Warpath, who's like the only good guy she's ever been interested in. And when she's sober, she's either fucking Jamie Madrox or Wade Wilson. I love her, but she's a fucking mess.
I
talked about that in my X-Treats thing about her, that she, and I had a whole like conversation about her terrible taste in men with another one of our friends, and about how like she totally is super shitty to Warpath, and he's probably like the only one who was like genuinely interested in her and like they could have had some kind of relationship with. I mean, I know this is not a Siren episode, but like, no.
They changed the trial of Teresa Rourke Cassidy.
Yeah, but Jamie's not very good to her. And like, it's also the weird part with Richter and Teresa, that he also has known them since, I guess, they were teenagers. And I mean, in Fallen Angels, he's maybe what, like 20, 21? And they're like teenagers. And like, they were all on that team together, but he definitely like kind of blows that off, which is like really shitty.
So we opened this discussion by saying Jamie Madrox is an ordinary guy. We like him because he's the everyman, but then we uncover these like deep, complex parts of him. It's interesting though, when you think about it, he doesn't have a lot of key relationships in the X-Men world. We could talk about him with Havok or Polaris, him with Cyclops, him with Moira, but it's just not deeply explored outside of a few of the relationships. The only one I kind of left off the list was Monet, which is really hilarious with the two of them, actually. We're going to go ahead and jump into the trial portion of this show, but we when we have these discussions, there's always kind of a certain amount of energy created. And again, I think one of the big questions we have to ask ourselves as jury members is, how much control does he have based on the different storylines we're about to discuss? So with that, let us commence with the trial of Jamie Madrox. Each of the jury members has been assigned a specific section of Jamie's history. I've asked each of you to prepare a prosecution and a defense of Jamie in each of these areas. After that, we will discuss, and each of us gets to vote from 0, meaning completely innocent or blameless, all the way up 5, which means completely evil. We will take a final score at the end. Before we continue, anyone need to pause or have any questions? Okay, let's just keep going. Trial point 1, we are calling multiple menace.
In Indiana, summer means more than sunshine. It's hiking miles and miles of trails to magnificent views and cruising through caves on underground river rides. It's spending the night in a floating cabin and scuba diving into your next big adventure. It's riding a horse and buggy through historic towns and camping with elephants at a wildlife park. It's anything but ordinary. Plan your trip at inindiana.com/summer.
The key issues here are Giant Size Fantastic Four, number 4, and X-Factor, numbers 71 through 75. The assigned jury member here is Daryl Lawrence. After the death of his parents in that freak tornado, Jamie Madrox lived alone on a farm before wandering into New York City, glowing with radioactive power. The suit that had been designed to contain him is now radiating yellow energy. After putting some civilians at risk and inadvertently draining power from the city's entire electric grid, Jamie fought the Thing and was like super strong for a minute from all that energy. And the more dupes he generates, the stronger he seems to become. After holding his own against the entire Fantastic Four, Jamie's approached by Charles Xavier, who uses his mental powers to simply shut down the brains of all of Jamie's dupes, which either were buried or reabsorbed, we don't quite know. Later, during the Fallen Angels saga, Jamie generated one particular dupe that seemed determined to have a life of his own at all costs. And when Jamie joined X-Factor years later, one of the very first foes they faced was this rogue dupe who had joined with the new villain team, the Nasty Boys, working for the new major villain, Mr. Sinister, as well as the mutant Ricochet, a guy named Senator Stephen Chaffron, whose powers can alter the powers of other mutants. So you almost wonder if that's where this dupe split off or got evil, I don't know. A dupe of Jamie was murdered then later at a public press conference, and the Nasty Boy Jamie claimed to be the original Madrox, with the original being the actual rogue dupe. The duo both create many dupes who battle around Washington, D.C. before the original two were contained and questioned. Due to Chaffron's powers, Nasty Boy Jamie convinced everyone that he was the original. He reabsorbed original Jamie back into his form, but it didn't work out so great. Talk about some weird cosmic indigestion. While back with the Nasty Boys, the original Jamie then took back over the form of the Nasty Boy dupe and reclaimed the powers, and then turned against the villains, exposing the evil senator and helping save the day in the end. This is the first truly crazy Jamie story, and there are some doozies to follow. Let me turn it over to Daryl Lawrence.
Well, in the nature of prosecution, I have to submit to the jury that incompetence is not an excuse for not being charged with something. And you can see that Jamie Madrox is incompetent throughout the course of his adventures. His inaction in removing himself from a highly populated city center such as New York City, when he knows that he's draining the power from everything, is arguably fairly evil, that he's gaining all this power, and then when someone tries to check that power, he beats them up. And Ben Grimm did nothing wrong. He was trying to save his city. He was trying to save the Yancey Street Gang and just make sure that there isn't another blackout in New York City where people are going to riot and steal some TVs from a storefront. If we then move on to Washington, D.C., because Jamie is incompetent and lost track of his own dupe, we had just wreckage all over the nation's capital, including in the American History Museum, the mishandling of a legendary puppet, Kermit the Frog. Jim Henson was not even in his grave at this point, but he was rolling in it because of what happened to Kermit. And following that, they then moved on to the Air and Space Museum during their battle, and they ruined the original Star Trek Enterprise. So there's a lot of property destruction here, and he could have checked this at any point. If he kept track of a dupe, he could have tracked it down. He wasn't doing anything. He's just chilling after Fallen Angels. He could have been like, wait, where'd that one go? Maybe I should look him up. He didn't. And he also, when he was subjected to questioning by Valerie Cooper, did not give any of this information when he was in the room with the being he said was his own dupe. He didn't do anything about it. In the nature of defense, this poor boy grew up for years on a farm alone. He walked all the way from Kansas to New York City, and of course he needed some power because he was hungry. And that's just the way that his suit was feeding him at that time. The suit was also malfunctioning. Like, you know who could have helped him out in this regard? Charles Xavier, who came down in a reverse Poochie move. He just sort of came down from the sky and landed on a rooftop and was like, oh, this is a problem. I was watching you for a few years and I could have helped, but sorry, bro. If we flip over later on, dupes happen and it's hard to track them. It's not like he has a radar where he can say, oh, my dupes are here, I can track them down. This dupe was nefarious, took advantage of poor, simple Jamie and skirted out because he wanted to have a Nasty Boy lifestyle. And it's really hard when you have Sinister in the mix to even try try to track someone down like that? And he did. And he was doing everything he could to profess that he was innocent. And no one believed him because no one believed in his capabilities nor his intellect. He's a very smart individual. Some would say that he's the smartest ever. And no one, absolutely no one believed him. They locked him up and they're like, oh, well, all right. And it was only because he allowed himself to be absorbed into his dupe. And then he did like a little supernova thing and turned himself inside out and destroyed that dupe that the day was saved. He had to do it himself because you know what? The damn team wasn't doing anything. I rest my case.
Who's been killing them nasty clones? Nasty boys. I think, I don't know, in my opinion, that original story, Charles Xavier is fully to blame. That's where my vibe goes. But in the nasty boy story, do you think this is a dupe that has a desire to be evil or to be chaotic? Because everything he does is just try to fuck Jamie Prime over. Like, to the point where I will not live my own life until he's gone. I'm going to hang out on a team called the Nasty Boys with my really lovely teammates Slab, Hairbag, and Ramrod, and we're just going to go do nasty shit. I don't know. What are your thoughts on that dupe? What does it represent with Jamie, and how much control does Jamie have?
I think it represents chaos, like you said. Also, intrinsic, maybe not evil, but definitely bad, and some tendencies that Jamie let loose on the world with that dupe. Again, we've talked about his power where he can't really control what's being popped out of him, and he probably believed that this dupe was okay, and then the dupe was like, all right, well, peace out. So I think it's bad. And Jamie didn't realize he could control him until he had to think outside the box and outside the dupe and figure out how can I get in there to sort of fuck up all of his plans.
It's interesting, the idea of happenstance with this storyline as well. Jamie for sure did not plan this sequence of events, Jamie Prime, but what he ultimately ended up doing was taking down a corrupt United States senator and foiling the plot of Mr. Sinister, which is really interesting to me. I don't know. It's interesting to think, like, is he a character who just kind of falls into the right place consistently? I don't know. I know Scott's going to rate this character a 0 because of the Kermit punch already. Do we have any questions or comments from the jury based on the Nasty Boy storyline?
I will say it is established that the Nasty Boy dupe in the beginning, I think it's in 75, that he actually drugged Jamie Prime before Fallen Angels. That's how he goes on the trip with Moira to America. It's never really acknowledged after that, but Jamie Prime is actually back on Muir Island during the whole thing, and that's partly why he and Siren, he doesn't remember, like, when he later breaks Siren's heart early in 90s X-Factor, and is just like, I don't remember you because I wasn't there, huh? So.
And Chris Claremont creates this character, but it's Mary Jo Duffy that gets points for, like, yeah, creating the complexity of his psyche that Peter David later picks up on. It's all Mary Jo Duffy and Fallen Angels that gives us everything we love about Jamie later, frankly. Are we ready to vote in this section? Okay, we're going to go ahead and vote from 0 to 5. Wonderful job, Daryl. Thank you. I'm going to go first on this one, and I think it's just, we talk about the culpability of, like, being responsible for your powers, but I don't know. I think it's just a 1 for me. I think he's a little bit blameless. It ends up in a good place, and what harm was truly done in the long run? He had a secret agent in the Nasty Boys.
Chad, I agree with you. I think I'm also going to go 1. This definitely feels like you're learning your powers, you're figuring it out. Like, lots of mutants have this kind of story. Jamie's is just complicated by the fact that there's a guy with his face that's doing bad things.
I got to give this a 0 because, if anything, he took down a corrupt United States senator. He's a hero. He's more of a hero than Val Cooper. Quite frankly, they should have put him in charge after that. Yeah, you think about that, America.
I'll give him a 1. It's a very classic story, I feel, of like, oh, well, my power is funky. It's up to me and to, like, get a better understanding. And I feel like there's a moment of self, what's it called? Self-actualization, self-realization. Like, the power is within him to take over.
As much as I want Jamie Madrox to be guilty because he's the worst, I will have to agree that this was definitely like young kid not fully understanding his powers. And again, as we find out in the story that evil dupes be evil duping and like drugged him. And so like Jamie Prime wouldn't have any knowledge of this dupe that escaped. Like I don't think he like said, hey, dupe, I want you to go do this. It was like dupe is created and then drugs Jamie and is like, deuces, motherfucker, I'm out. Like, I'm gonna go be evil.
Ooh, another odd theory is like evil nasty boy dupe was actually Jamie Prime the whole time. Cause then he like reabsorbs the other Jamie later. Interesting. Secret agent Jamie.
I'm going with a zero. This poor innocent man baby went to the big city when Charles Xavier could have flown him there. And then he was roofied. So it seems like he's the victim in this entire section.
So that gives us a 4 out of 30, which is so low. That's amazing. And we're going to go to trial point 2, which is called Murdering Mellencamp. The key issues here are X Factor 98, 128, and 129. The assigned jury member here is Demanda Martini. Madrox started going darker, getting more savage and depressed as he experienced the world's violence and unfairness toward mutants. There was a lot of crazy shit going on, you guys. Mutant murders and massacres and like refugees and bodies in piles and legacy viruses. I mean, crazy times. In a battle with the Acolytes, he created a dupe inside the body of the lizard-like Mellencamp, which then blew this guy to bits. Jamie then fell into a period of deeper depression, grew suicidal, and contracted the legacy virus. He sought a cure through Haven, and I have an episode on Haven out there with Jam DeMatteis, but her attempts to purify him left him seemingly dead. But Madrox survived by splitting his consciousness between three dupes or something like that. One of them was found by Valerie Cooper and trained as a government agent secretly, but that Jamie ended up going off on his own. So he's back in a purple and silver costume and he's masked and he's committing crimes in Macon County, Georgia. And the new version of X-Factor, who's like Forge, Mystique, Sabretooth, and Wildchild, are sent in to stop him and they violently take down these dupes before realizing it's their old ally. And Valerie sent them to contain Jamie and he ends up back on the team. This is a wild section to try to piece together, but I gotta get creative. Let me turn it over to Demanda Martini.
So this is the crazy dark times of the 90s, right? Like this is when the 90s definitely go off the charts. To the first point of Mellencamp, I feel like that, for prosecution, I feel like the X-Men, and correct me if I'm wrong, but I think there's like hard line in the sand. The X-Men don't kill, and the United States government does not sanction their agents to kill mutants. I mean, I think that's in there. I don't know how Blob got through that, but, you know, I'm assuming that that's in there. So I feel like that was a little much. I think that, like, that wasn't, like, following orders. That was, like, you're taking matters into your own hands. But, ching. And with him somehow surviving the legacy virus by splitting himself off into these other dupes, and then, I mean...
I'll create a dupe that has the virus, and then I don't have it, is how I read it.
Yes, which is... Sure, Jan, that's fine. But again, guilty. Do we ever trust Val Cooper when she's like, hey, you should come with me as I train you secretly to be a kill agent? No, I wouldn't do that. That's we don't trust Val Cooper. She's not trustworthy. And then she sends her other kill squad. Again, X-Factor in the late 90s was crazy. Why is this team consisting of Forge, Mystique, Sabretooth, and Wildchild to be like, oh, by the way, please go take out this problem that I created? But he is definitely culpable in that, being that he then hid his own death from his own friends. Like, why is he lying about it? Why is he being weird about it? But on the flip side, in Jamie's defense, I remember reading the issue that Jamie contracts the legacy virus. And for those who may not remember, so they're on Genosha and there is like sort of an outbreak of the legacy virus and they are in these containment suits and they're trying to like save all the people and find them. And there is one mutant, because like the legacy virus is like running rampant through old Genosian mutates. It's sort of like how
the AIDS virus has hit vulnerable populations, yes, in Africa.
You definitely feel that, and it's terrible. So when Jamie is sort of like gets cut off from the rest of the team and he finds this mutant and the mutant is going into cardiac arrest, because he doesn't have backup, Jamie's only way to save this person's life is to create a dupe of himself to perform mouth-to-mouth mouth resuscitation, which definitely exposes himself, which is a pretty heroic act. Like, that is really awesome. And he doesn't say anything. I remember Polaris looking at, like, this energy map, and, like, there's little X's that represent the X-Factor team, and there's, like, I think it's, like, the numbers of the Genosian citizens, which also, oh, so horrible. But she distinctly remembers seeing that there's, like, this weird, like, shifting X when Jamie creates the dupe, and she's like, Jamie, what's that? And he's like, no, never mind. Like, it's whatever. So he selflessly is sacrificing himself in order to save this person's life. And from that, girl, the dark times of Jamie Madrox, when he starts creating these dupes, and there's like the faceless dupe who's like so depressed that they don't even get a face, which again is like dupe that has the legacy virus. Like, he is deeply depressed. And as we all know, there is mental health crises in the United States of America and in the United States government. And what does Val Coop, serious government lady, do? She sees that there is a weakness in this young man and knows that he is easily manipulated, so helps him fake his own death in order for her to create a secret agent. Is he guilty of that? No, that is Val Cooper. She is the worst, but I love her.
This is an interesting time in comics history. The AIDS virus was really running rampant in the real world in the late 80s, early 90s. And we started seeing all these like really bloody parallels. But there was also a thing about loss of innocence going on. Robin dies in like the Batman Killing Joke in like 1988, right? And like Doug Ramsey dies in New Mutants in 1990. When the Extinction Agenda happens, Wolfsbane gets turned into this like brainless machine with her head shaved, and Warlock dies in battle, right? Then we see characters like Strong Guy, who is happy but has a heart attack, and Jamie, who's the happy guy who starts to suffer from depression and then dies of the virus. There's like a really odd like body count, countered by like Cable's like paramilitary, we gotta fucking fight back X-Force, let me take your youth and like weaponize it. Really fascinating time in comics history when you stack it all up. Jamie's culpability in this, how culpable is he for killing Mellencamp specifically, I suppose, is one of my questions as a government agent, because the rest kind of, you really understand it in an odd way.
I mean, I was gonna say, like, that's the one thing. It's like, dude, you did go a little too far with that. That was not really necessary.
I have a question. So a different Mellencamp. What do you think Madrox's thoughts are on John Cougar Mellencamp? Because that might be important to how I vote in the specific section.
I'm only assuming. But, you know, he's from the Midwest. He probably doesn't like Jersey that much.
Mellencamp is part of the Acolytes who were killing and slaughtering innocents at the time. So I kind of understand it in an odd way. But, you know, what else is Jamie going to do besides fire a gun? I don't know. Do we have any questions or comments before we vote in this section?
I would say he probably does like John Cougar Mellencamp.
Thank you.
Yeah. I could see him really enjoying Jack and Diane or some of those other Cougar
hits. Little Pink Houses.
Hurt So Good. Yeah.
I'm actually not super worried about his treatment of Mellencamp, but he's on Factor, and it's Mystique and Saber. Like, it kind of makes sense that they would kill that acolyte. My question to Demanda is, how do you feel about his treatment of dupes in these sections? Like, in this section? Like, he shoved a dupe into the mouth of the Lizard Man. Like, he lets a dupe go get the legacy virus.
I actually think, like, processing that in my head, I think that's part of the suicidal depression where, yes, these are extensions of me. And again, he just had one try to literally kill him. So I think him using them as weapons or using them as cannon fodder literally is probably just an extension of that, where he kind of doesn't care about them because he doesn't care about himself.
But also, if I had this power, I would make a dupe to do the dishes and, like, a dupe to do the therapy, and I'd be on a beat somewhere.
And then I'd snap its neck because I can't.
All right, so voting in this section, let's go Daryl, Philip, and then Matt.
I'm going to go with a 2. Good point about the treatment of the dupes by Matt. But otherwise, it seems pretty selfless, especially with the actions that he's doing to others, not necessarily himself.
Philip?
I don't know. feel like I'm landing somewhere between a 1 and a 2. Like, a lot of things are being done to him rather than him having all that much agency about it. And as we saw in one of the 93 annuals where they introduced new characters, like, sometimes you just have to create a dupe in the mouth of a dinosaur to survive and get through it. So I'm going to say 1.
The thing of Mellencamp is a murder, but it is also in the line of duty. But I don't think Jamie thinks what he's doing is cruel to these things, because I think Demand is right. It's self-harm more than it is other harm. But I do think that the plight of that dupe, like, that dupe does have a consciousness and was just shoved into the mouth of a lizard. Like, I can't give him a 1. So 2 is what I'm going to go with.
It is a 3 for me, because Mellencamp is very much in the Magneto was right category, which is an odd thing to consider. They are killing humans, but this is a mutant working for the human government, choosing to kill a mutant paramilitary, even though Mellencamp was bad, more along the lines of like a character like Senyaka. It is a murder and it was avoidable. Scott and then Demanda?
I'm going to use a little law here. I'm going to give this a 0 because there's a doctrine of qualified immunity. He was acting as a federal agent to stop a known wanted terrorist in the form of Mellencamp. Can't sue him. Can't hold him accountable. So we'll leave that aside. For the dupe who acquired the legacy virus, I mean, you have to establish that these dupes are independent beings, or are they just agents of Jamie Prime? If they're just agents of Jamie Prime, in that case, it's his body, it's his choice, you know? And I think this whole prosecution is groundless, and I would move to dismiss it.
We have an actual attorney in the ranks. And then Demanda.
So I think just because I don't like Jamie, and you know what? This isn't real. I'm going to go with the 3.
So that gives us an 11 out of 30 in that section. And we will move on to trial point 3, which we are calling multifarious mishaps. The key issues here, X Factor Volume 3, numbers 1, 10, 12, and 16. The assigned jury member here is Matt Parent. During a time when Jamie was sending his dupes out all over the world to develop new skill sets, Jamie launched a private investigation branch that started as XXX Investigations and soon became X Factor Investigations. His dupes seem to be divisions of his own psyche, having complex relationships with Jamie Prime and the other dupes. And the dupes are going rogue with like vibes of chaos or high libidos become the norm. Jamie gathers a new family around him, Strong Guy, Monet, Richter, Wolvesbane, and Layla Miller, who is 13. And the group later expands to include characters like Darwin, Pip the Troll, Havoc, Polaris, Longshot, and others. While the team was trying to save a depowered Richter from committing suicide, one rebellious dupe pushed Richter off the roof just to see what would happen. Luckily, Richter survived. After learning major secrets that the X-Men were keeping from all mutants related to M-Day and the loss of mutant powers at the hands of the Scarlet Witch, Jamie went public against the X-Men. Then he got drunk that night, and one of his dupes had sex with Siren, and one of his dupes had sex with Monet. And in a very awkward moment, Jamie asked the underage Layla Miller if he had also had sex with her. He didn't say it quite that way, but that was the intonation. And she said, "I'm saving myself for our wedding night." She knows stuff, folks. Another rogue dupe blew up an entire building during a key moment on a complex mission, seemingly killing the supervillain Damian Tripp, as mentioned before, inside. While consistently hinting that he might be gay for Richter, Madrox also went to visit a dupe of his that had formed its own complex life and identity, John Maddox, a preacher who had his own life, his own church, his own wife, and his own child, Daniel. Jamie kissed John's wife before telling John that he was going to reabsorb him. John drew a gun on Jamie, who challenged the dupe to shoot. And in the end, Jamie chose to let John keep living his own life. Let me turn it over to Matt Parent.
Well, first, the defense. Much has been said today on the nature of Mr. Madrox's powers. Why not? They are as incredible as they are existentially terrifying. But it would seem to me there is an obvious answer to the question, is Jamie Madrox at all times responsible for the behavior of his dupes? The purview of this portion of today's trial is all the horrible actions, and they are admittedly horrible, of what we are calling rogue dupes. Fortunately for us, we have a slightly similar situation to look for precedent. The trial of Magneto concluded that the mutant terrorist and liberator could not be held accountable for his actions he took before he was transformed into a baby. The new Magneto represented a new life and must be judged thusly. The same, I argue, is true for Mr. Madrox. When Jamie makes a dupe, this is a new being, perhaps a being similar to the one before, but was not the newly re-aged Magneto, similar to the first version. As a point of proof, Mr. Madrox's dupes have joined S.H.I.E.L.D., fighting for the Superhuman Registration Act, unlike Jamie Prime, who was vocally against it. One has become a pastor and settled down to raise a family. While this dupe is out of proximity, Jamie has no recollection or knowledge, or most importantly of all, control over their behavior. It is that fact which clears Mr. Madrox of the worst of these crimes, which is the attempted murder of Julio Richter and the bombing of Mr. Tripp's building. As for some of the lecherous attitudes of some of the dupes brought forward here today, or what these aspects of Jamie's personality say about him as a whole, that is rather unimportant. Mr. Madrox does not have to be a good person in order to be innocent. I think it's clear that as he asks such an inappropriate question to Miss Layla Miller, even Mr. Madrox is unsure of where the line might be with some of these rogue dupes. It shows a lack of intent to commit any of the aforementioned crimes, which coupled alongside the nature of Jamie's power as it stands today, should render my client innocent. And now the prosecution. Today, we have heard a lot about whether or not Jamie Madrox is his dupes. Do they constitute an aspect of him that he is in control of, meaning he is responsible for the bad behavior of so-called rogue dupes, or are these dupes responsible for themselves? I posit to the jury that though this question is fascinating, it is a moot point. Jamie Madrox is guilty either way, though what he is guilty of differs depending upon our answer. It is obvious if a dupe is Mr. Madrox, then a crime committed by a dupe is a crime committed by Mr. Madrox. The defense has said as much in their statement. But if Jamie Madrox dupes are their own people and therefore responsible for their own actions, is not Jamie Prime responsible for his behavior towards these newly established people? If a dupe is a man, then is what Jamie did to Father John Maddox not attempted murder? Is what he, with the help of his dupes, did to win Who Wants to Be a Millionaire, the seed money that funded X Factor investigations in the first place, not a criminal conspiracy to defraud that production? So you will see we have a crossroads, but it is not whether or not Jamie Madrox is guilty, but rather which of the crimes he is guilty for. If the dupes are Mr. Madrox, then the attempted murder of Julio Richter, the murder of Mr. Tripp, and the reckless endangerment of those inside. If the dupes are their own people, then Mr. Madrox is an attempted murder of one John Maddox, the false imprisonment of the rogue dupe who pushed Richter off the building, and again, the defrauding of our beloved Who Wants to Be a Millionaire. Members of the jury, throw the book at this man. Regardless of how, we know that Mr. Madrox can be nothing but guilty.
Delicious, Matt. Thank you. Brainstorm thought experiment that just occurred to me while you were talking, and this would have to be revealed on page. What if Jamie's primary power is to create exact dupes? And what if his secondary mutation is to divide off pieces of himself into those dupes? That's an interesting thought experiment on its own. This is an interesting one. This is Jamie at his worst, but also his most hilarious. These are really funny issues, with the exception of that 13-year-old Layla Miller scene, which is so uncomfortable. Ooh. If a child told me, I'm saving myself for your wedding night, I'd be like, kid, you need to go live somewhere else because this went way too far. Just now, if my powers are this out of control, there's a problem.
Have we bothered to depose Regis Philbin on this? Because I'm interested in seeing what his reaction would be.
Regis did not make the Krakoan resurrection protocols after his death, so there's an inability. I'll call Dead Girl and see if she can find anything out for
Thank
us.
You.
You know, I gotta go on this section probably with the two, simply because, I mean, I can forgive trying to kill Richter. They have Avalanche. He's redundant.
No.
The sleeping with all the female members of Factor except for Layla, thank God, does lead to the whole Sean incident.
So I am also going to, I'm going to go with a three, just because I'm not sure how old Monet is at this point, but she is like very much younger than Teresa. If she's 18, she must have just turned 18, because she is part of the Generation X kids. Those kids obviously like bounce around between being 17 to 21 all the time, but this is still, I mean, this story is what, almost 20, 25 years old now? Like, it's when it happened in comics, I still felt very icky about it. Because I'm like, I don't think Monet's old enough for this. And the quickly aging her up to make it okay just never sat well with her. So even if she was 18, I still think, Jamie, absolutely not. This, no. No, thank you.
There's also a hilarious scene where Monet's like, oh, so I fucked a dupe. I want to talk to him. And she starts banging Jamie against the wall, like popping dupe after dupe out. Like, where's the one? Where's the one who fucked me? It's really great. This one is, I'm surprising myself. I think it would be a 2. No, he blew up a building. Like, there's major property destruction. I might consider lowering it, but he also chose the name XXX Investigations, which really bumps it up for me. So it's a 3 here for me.
I'm landing between a 2 and a 3. Like, the Layla stuff, I never had thought about the Monet being younger. She always came off as older, but I didn't have the context before. Like, I read Generation X after X Factor Investigations. And
because they act more mature does not mean they are older.
So the Layla thing, like, I can see him asking the same question to, like, anybody who was there, but that doesn't even make it better. Like, it's still gross with Layla. So I don't mind the blowing up a building part, because it's always, I feel like, a little part of me that's just like, what if I did the thing? And, like, at least it took out a bad guy. Well, a version of a bad guy. So,
but again, murder.
Well, yeah, I suppose. So 3.
I'm going with a 3 because he's showing some major Rick James energy within this section. Just very chaotic. Kissing people, then probably, like, punching them in the face and then saying, like, unity! But I'm going with 3 just because there's some gross... Like, kissing John Maddox's wife. What? It's a little extra.
I'm gonna say 4. I think he's actually quite guilty here. This is my very favorite version of Jamie, but the John Maddox especially, I think, is such a, like, cruel little moment that he, like, he makes this religious person accept him as God, essentially. It's such a, like, existentially horrible thing he does to John. And John Maddox is still alive. Like, he does make the right decision with it, but, like, he lets him know that, like, your life is completely subject to my will. On top of, like, if he's either responsible for that, or he's responsible for pushing Richter off the building and blowing up the building and all of the other bad behavior of the dupes. So no matter what, I think he's a 4.
So that gives us a 17 out of 30 in this section. By the way, we didn't talk about this. There are at least 25 jokes across Jamie's history where someone was like, oh, so that's why they call you multiple man, referring to multiple orgasms. It's a frequent joke with this character, and it's great every time.
So, that I'm sure he's very happy that he's guilty of.
All right, let's go to trial point 4, which we are calling Multiverse Madness. The key issues here being X Factor Volume 3, 25, and then 42 through 50. This was a denser section, also a very rough storyline. So let me thank Mr. Scott Free for taking the one that's the most problematic in this area, just for continuity reasons. After M-Day, Madrox sent a few of his dupes into possible futures to see what the future births of mutants might be. This is where, like, Wanda wiped out all mutants across all accessible timelines. One dupe ended up trapped in a time vortex and then pulled out of it by Damian Tripp, the Killcrop guy, and a guy named Anthony Falcone, and he was turned into a Doomlock, which is basically a human that's upgraded with tech. It's like a little cyborgy that, like, allows you to do things in the timeline that don't result in divergent timelines. So think of it a little like the Terminator. Like, if I send you back and you kill someone, it won't branch off in a different timeline. It will just, like, alter your world. Okay, so the Doomlock is also able to fire energy blasts from his hands and to regenerate from damage and to mind control people and to be super strong. So there's one Jamie dupe who's now been super upgraded. This dupe takes the name Cortex and is sent back in time to kill key individuals who will alter the timeline 80 years in the future, where Jamie Prime and his now new adult sex partner, Layla Miller, are involved in what they call the Summers Rebellion. So Cortex in the past is killing a bunch of former mutants, like named Candy and Lenore. And there's a bunch of complicated fights in both timelines, and it goes on for so long that break out. Monet is here, Shatterstar, John Maddox, Longshot. And in the future, this is where we get that story about Ruby Summers, who is like Cyclops and Emma's daughter. And also an elderly Dr. Doom. Cortex ends up shooting and killing Jamie Prime, and then kills a guy named Salve, as well as Trevor Fitzroy, who gets brought back by Layla Miller with no soul. And then he sees Anthony Falcone attack with a group of future Sentinels, and in the end he gets tossed into a portal and is apparently still out there in the time stream somewhere. Also, Jamie Prime's fine. Let me turn it over to Scott Free, who already has a headache.
This is probably my least favorite part of X-Factor, so thanks. I'll start with the prosecution here. Jamie doesn't think things through. I mean, we've established that at this point. And, you know, volunteering and agreeing to go along with Forge's plan to send dupes into the future and not really thinking about the consequences of this. What's going to happen to these dupes? How are they going to get the information back? Well, Forge says the dupes are going to kill themselves, and you'll get the information somehow back through the time stream. Now, if you accept that these dupes are their own individuals, you're sending these men on a suicide mission. And quite frankly, that's not what the X-Men or various X-Men offshoots are about, unless you're on one of Cable's teams of child soldiers. So you do have to go with that. And then, you know, ending up in future and getting involved with Layla Miller. Now, let's deal with the Layla Miller of it all. She is a 13-year-old who's sometimes a 30-year-old who then gives her memories to a 13-year-old. Anyway, in the future, they start making out, and he's like, this feels right. This has felt like it's been coming for sort of a while. And I'm like, this was your like weird child office assistant. Like, what the hell are you doing here?
But also a weird flavor to toss in is they were in like a concentration camp together and like getting genetically branded. Right. It's weird components.
right. I left out the matching tattoos bit. They both have the M tattoo. Tattoos, you know, more commonly associated with Bishop prior to this, they acquire the M tattoo, which, as a sidebar, as a Jamie Madrox cosplayer, is great because it becomes very identifying, and I'm not just some random white guy. People are like, oh, it's Jamie Madrox. Oh, yeah. But to return to the trial, the Layla Miller of it all in this section alone should, you know, send this man to jail because, like, what are you doing? Like, you know her as a child. You know her back in the main time frame as a child. So, please out there. And also bringing Dr. Doom along, it's Dr. Doom. You know, young Dr. Doom, middle-aged Dr. Doom, elderly Dr. Doom. Doom is going to doom. He's going to screw you over because that's what he does. And shock, he screwed you over. Now, for the defense, I would say a lot of this is Layla Miller's fault. She jumps into the portal. The future, you know, she set this all in motion and dragged Jamie into the future. This is also, once again, Jamie and other X-Men characters being pulled into the orbit of Summer's family bullshit. Cable's running around with a baby strapped to his chest. Horrible Summer's children in the future, Ruby Summers. Scott is still alive for some reason with cyborg bits. And you know what? And they're nasty to him when he arrives there. They're really nasty to him. Cyclops says, oh, I saw Layla cry, but she was a little girl. Why are you crying? And it's just like, I don't know, Scott, because he's been pulled into the future and has to deal with your bullshit rebellion that's clearly been going on for such a long time that you are not able to actually finish it because, I don't know, maybe it's because Charles is dead. I don't know. But I'm losing the thread of things here. Yeah, Jamie's innocent. It's Layla Miller's fault, so you must acquit.
It seems to me, Scott, like you are only considering Jamie Prime and that you see Cortex as a completely separate and distinct being who's not part of the trial. Is that how you're viewing this?
Yes. I really didn't want to engage with Cortex of it all because Cortex is very confusing.
I do think that's a fair assessment, that Cortex is a completely distinct being who, if the dupes are normally under Jamie's control, this is a dupe who has been terminated in the future by other people. Are we okay accepting that as a premise for the entire jury? So we're only holding Jamie Prime accountable in this section?
Yeah, to get serious though on the Cortex bit for that, Cortex is very confusing. It's conceptually very confusing, and he's a dupe who's pulled out of the time stream. Basically becomes sort of like a Deathlok kind of figure where he's more machine than man, and his personality is very divergent. He's techno-organic. You start to get the techno-organic virus stuff. He takes over Monet. And I think if you're going to start holding Jamie Prime responsible for this, like, such divergent dupe, you know, it opens up a whole Pandora's box of issues.
Cortex is confusing in the way that, like, Longshot is Shatterstar's dad, but also Shatterstar is Longshot's dad. Kind of confusing. It fucks with my head. I really dislike it.
Cortex is so different that Jamie can't even, like, the thought of reabsorbing Cortex is too much. Like, Cortex is like, well, what if I'm stronger? What if I then become Prime and I just end up absorbing you? Like, that's how different and how strong he is compared to Jamie Prime, and like all the other dupes are way down below. So the Cortex of it all, like, and like the dupes went into two different ones and then he got yanked from one into the other because the dupe that was with Layla got blown up. So to have Trip bring this other one over is just messy.
So if we're only holding Jamie Prime, let me have you raise your hand if the vote is zero in this section. Scott and Matt and I are zero. Anyone else? Okay, so we've got three people, and Daryl, what's your vote?
I'm going with a four because he is pulling that. I'm giving everyone a musical education on this podcast. It's very Jerry Lee Lewis, and he is in love with his child cousin sort of thing. It's gross. It's problematic. There is no way to reconcile this in retrospect if you're a Kurt writer. Scott brought it up earlier. Like, you just sort of need to excise the Layla love thing out of it. Jamie's story currently to really make it work anymore.
Okay, would that give us...
I want to play devil's advocate on that.
Wow, okay.
I mean, yes, she's a textbook, and Madrox has gotten to the end of that book, and like her usefulness is... She doesn't know stuff anymore because the person that she was then, like, that timeline has already been on reruns.
I'm just saying he's gross.
But
four.
She
four.
Had all these years to be her own person and become an adult.
Layla's not on trial here. You I can know. Come back for Layla Miller's trial in like 75 years.
Yeah, we won't have Layla for a while. She's an interesting character. She's written as a very exasperating teenager, but Layla as an, like, she's like the stable adult in Jamie's life now. That part's yes. fine for me. I don't mind her yes. so these days. Okay, final.
I was going to chime in and be like, most of everything that happens to Jamie is Layla's fault.
Yes.
So so that's why I voted low on this. Like, most of all of that is Layla. I mean,
the worst thing Layla did was like trauma dump on her teenage self. That's yes. shitty.
Yes.
Yes.
Go ahead, Matt.
Adult Layla's fault, right? We're not sitting here saying 13-year-old Layla is the
No. It's adult Layla who's also forcing her teenage child self to then have these adult feelings yes. for an adult.
Teen Layla is exasperating, but I'm fond of this character in my own way. All right. Trial point five, we are calling Milky Way Mayhem. And the key issues here are X-Men Unlimited Infinity Comic 55 through 58 and 92 through 95, as well as the recent Dazzler Limited series by Jason Loeb. The assigned jury member here is Philip Lundquist. The world got simple for Jamie for a while, with the exception of that time Legion put all of his personalities into Jamie's dupes. But then Jamie married Layla Miller and moved home to his farm and had a kid named Davey. And then he got a 9-to-5 job helping run Krakoa. His dupes became drone workers, maintaining X-Corp, serving as the staff at the Hellfire Gala and filling in on various odd jobs. And when Jamie is bored, his dupes need adventures, it seems. It's almost like his subconscious acting out. So one rogue Jamie dupe goes into space, calls himself Captain Mad Rocks, and forms a pirate gang that he calls his Mad Rockers, soon robbing the Starjammers and committing other heists. Jamie Prime, with his son Davey, and Strong Guy end up going into space to stop them. Mad Rocks later returns, having teamed up with Blastar and his Blast Rockers in a plot to kidnap Davey Miller, leading to a conflict with Jamie Prime, Strong Guy, and the Fantastic Four. And Mad Rocks, I think, is in Shi'ar prison, I think, is where he's at now. While Jamie Madrox worked for Dazzler on her world tour, an evil dupe of his was secretly making plans behind the scenes to take Dazzler down. The dupe hired Scorpia, Spider-Man villain with a tail, to attack Dazzler on stage, manipulated a mutant telepath named Fred into getting involved by threatening Fred's family, and Fred made Dazzler attack humans while on camera. The evil dupe also hired Arcade to attack her in London, and then hired the Reaver Pretty Boy to attack her in New York. I really want to do a Pretty Boy Patreon. I just don't have room right now, but I really want to do one. Turns out this evil Jamie dupe made a pass at Dazzler once and she rejected him, so now he's gone full incel and is trying to destroy her life, but he ends up getting defeated in the end. Let me turn it over to Philip.
Chad, you gave me a really difficult one because the Infinity comic Madrox, where he made all these dupes, the dupes are like you know what? We died for this starship. We did all the work on this starship. It's our starship. Like, that to me is like, yeah, they put their blood, sweat, and tears into it. Why can't they go off and have a little fun? And if that dupe wants to, like, his job is to create chaos in that casino, and he just keeps on robbing casinos, as far as I'm concerned, rob from the rich and make a little asteroid base for yourself. But the Dazzler, like, not all men, multiple man? No. Like, I can't even come up with a defense for him. Like, that's just cool.
Jamie's incel dupe?
Yes. We don't need that dupe. That dupe needs to be reabsorbed or even just, like, gotten rid of and never written about again. But the dupes that were with Strong Guy and Davey, like, going through space, inviting the Fantastic Four over, like, yeah, a little bit evil, don't tell your spouse that you're inviting the Fantastic Four over for supper. Like, that's a whole thing. But, like, yeah, go meet your mentor. Like, oh, if this pirate force attacks and tries to kidnap your son, you fight back, and then you turn out, hey, you are a hero after all. So, I don't know how to split what you gave me into, like, real, real bad, like, five. Really hard to defend that Madrox versus the other one where it's like, we put all this time and effort into creating the starship. We deserve a little fun with it. We're going to go rob from the rich and make our own little base to be happy. I will say the rogue dupes, like good or bad aligned, they all sort of have this same goal of wanting to live their own lives and not be beholden to Madrox Prime. So I feel like that's a little bit of the pirate motivation. Like, I don't want to be reabsorbed. Like, I don't want my existence to end at the whim of Madrox Prime. John Maddox was a lot like that. Like, I have got my own life. I want to live it. I don't want to just be absorbed into you again. Let me live my life.
I do know from Jason that the Dazzler series, his original proposal was not that it would be evil Jamie at the end, but like it was through a series of negotiations with editorial that it turned out that way. But of course, Jamie has an incel dupe. Like, it had to happen at some point.
Yeah, and just as bad as the one who pushed Richter off a building, or yeah.
Or worse, it's like his weird way of like lashing out at Layla for like his domestic home life. Like, I'm gonna create all my evil impulses into a dupe and just send it out there. But you're right, the Mad Rocks part is really fun.
Yeah.
I feel like he has willfully created these dupes. And I feel like at this point in Jamie's life and him being like, I'm just going to be a domestic dad and I'm going to make these dupes and they're going to go do whatever. I feel like it's like, sir, have we not learned our lesson yet? Have we not figured this out yet? So I'm going to give it a 4. I feel like, dude, you have to be a little more responsible with where you're sowing your seed.
Daryl? I'm going to go with a 3. It could be worse. Yeah, but it could be better.
It's a 4 for me too. I mean, Allison is her own complicated character, but this is the post-Krakoa mutant society. Jamie's dupe is like doing shitty things in like the name of like making the world hate mutants, in addition to like fucking up Dazzler's life and like just being really awful. It's a 4 for me here as well. You got to control your powers at a certain point. Go fucking reabsorb that guy and like take care of yourself.
I think I'm gonna continue the role of 4, because if we're gonna be easy on Jamie in the first trial point where he's learning his powers, he's been around the block with rogue dupes at this point that he can be held responsible at the very least for some of it, for the kidnapping of his own child and the domestic terrorism and the harassment of Dazzler. Like, absolutely, it's a 4.
Probably gonna go with a 2.
I wanted to say 3, like, order, take the average of the two ends, but it's a 4.
So that gives us a 40% asshole scale at the end of the day for Jamie, which is fine. That's right on par for where you kind of think he would act. You know, as we have these discussions, I form like particular feelings about the character. The really thing that shook out for me in this conversation specifically is kind of Jamie's overall place in the mutant metaphor. He's so overlooked. So it's kind of this periphery character who plays some key roles. But when we get the story with him as the primary person, it's where it gets more interesting. He's a really fascinating lens to view the metaphor of mutants through, because he's a passing character, right? Like, he's a white, ordinary guy who has this complexity in his framework. Really interesting power sets. It's really fun to play with those power sets. Yeah, I'm kind of fascinated, but I also, his power annoys me too. Like, it's just, it's a really frustrating power to wrap your brain around because it has to take up so much room on the page unless he's just the cannon fodder guy. Really enjoyed this discussion with each of you. I'd love to hear any of your kind of final thoughts.
My introduction to Jamie was X Factor in the 90s. However, in the 2000s, there were two times, and it's the same era, it's the X-Corps era, where Jamie is, again, used as sort of like cannon fodder. And the first one is the death of Darkstar when they're fighting against the weapon, whatever the number is. And like, they kind of don't care that Jamie's being like all of his dupes are being like mind controlled by the thing and like getting fully murdered and whatever. And then when Banshee tries to do the X-Corps thing, it's kind of the same thing. Jamie's just kind of everywhere and is like just the dude doing like lifting heavy boxes or being security guards or whatever, where and like no one's talking to him, like no one's like paying him second thought. And so I have to say, like, Jamie, yes, asshole, 40%. It's like, it's not zero, but also it's not unwarranted sometimes. Like, obviously this kid who's like class clown wants attention can literally create his own circus but gets repeatedly ignored when it comes to like the big moments of X history. Yeah, I'd kind of be an asshole too. All social media, well, actually not all, most social media, at Demanda Martini, DMANDAMARTINI. You will be able to find me at Trek Long Island, so if you are in the area and you're a Trekkie and you want to come see me and my dear friend Jessica Krause doing Trekkie nonsense, come find us at Trek Long Island. Coming up after that in June, Pride Month is obviously booked and blessed, so I will be all out and about and around. And then, of course, at the Uncanny Experience in July, so can't wait to see you all there.
I love Jamie Madrox so much. He's one of my very favorite X-Men characters of any kind, but 40% of an asshole sounds like exactly right. I think I wouldn't like him so much if he wasn't kind of a little bit of a dick. I love this conversation. I think that, like, he is such a weird lens, and he was such a lens for such a long time and is now back to being such a like secondary character that it's so odd that there's 120 comics where he's the main guy in this X-Men mutant metaphor story. I can't really think of an X-Men character that like had such a like moment, and then now that moment is sort of like over. I would love to see more Jamie. I'm always excited to see more Jamie Madrox. I run Escape the Mojoverse with my partner, Allison Parent. You can find us at Escape the Mojoverse on all social medias. And all through June, we're going to be doing the Avengers Academy by Oliveira.
Matt, so happy to have you in our little podcasting community. It's looking so forward to meeting you this summer.
I'm Daryl Lawrence, and my final thoughts, I really still love the character of Madrox. Having invested so much time in reading about him, not only for this trial, but just, you know, for our own podcast and things like that, I really think he's an enjoyable character. I hope we see more of him and sort of build on where he is now in the future. There's a lot of stuff that you can do with him. I think, speaking of X-Corp, the most recent series, he's sort of relegated to that, oh, he's a scientist, but they're also doing warehouse work sort of thing. I want to see writers continue to break out of that and utilize him more. In terms of what I can plug, it is near the end of May, and coming on July 1st, I have a whole book about Alpha Flight's first volume coming out, and you can pre-order it now. You don't have to wait until July 1st. You can go to barnesandnoble.com or bn.com. It's a shortcut, and all you have to do is search for True North Alpha Flight. It will bring you to the product page for True North, a complete reference guide and analysis of Alpha Flight's first volume. Pre-order your copy. It will ship out on July 1st, or if you're going to the Uncanny Experience, there's a pre-order live specifically for you. Check out my Instagram at Mac on Fleetwood, and you can go to the link in bio and go ahead and pre-order a copy that I will sign in person, and you'll get a special little gift at the Uncanny Experience if you get a copy there.
This group, all of us are creative talents who have a lot of energy to give, and I love that about each and every one of us. But Daryl, I'm so fucking proud of you for putting this book together. You've been, for as long as I've known you now, you've always been writing a book, and I've seen how hard you've been working on this one, and it's under your own power, not someone else's. I'm proud of you, man. I can't wait to read it.
Thank you.
My final final thoughts on Jamie. I still like him. To go back to what I said at the very beginning, I think he's still very relatable in terms of all the things you can do incapacitated by choice. So what do you do with that? And X Factor Thad did a fun job with how to deal with that through the use of the dupes. Like, it's a really, his power makes a really good mechanism to explore that aspect of humanity or demonology, but since he got turned into a demon by Mephisto, and it took Terry as a goddess to restore him to humanity, which was just a, such a nice bookend for the two of them, I thought. But and the kill crop of it all, like, there's some potential there of exploring other dimensions through his dupes, either where they go or when something traumatic happens to one of them, does it just hop into another dimension where that Jamie had died and he can live on in that life? So lots of potential, similar to what other folks said, like, sort of a shame that he's just in the background doing manual labor and waiting on tables in a very background way where there's not much development, except for, like, one trying to unionize and getting yelled at by Mandrax Prime for living in a capitalist society. You can find us at X Factor Files on Instagram.
X Factor Files Podcast.
No, I knew I was going to mess it up.
It's okay.
X Factor Files Podcast.
It's so good to see you, Philip. Thanks for coming. And then lastly, Scott.
Yeah, I feel like I have in my life said a lot about Jamie Madrox, so I don't know if I have anything new beyond 90s X Factor. The Peter David stuff is probably my favorite single Marvel run. The Larry Stroman art, beautiful. If you've never read it, wholeheartedly recommend checking it out. It's out in omnibus form now. It's all on Marvel Unlimited. Enjoy. End of May. I will see a lot of people at the Uncanny Experience. I will be probably pretty annoying. Apologize for nothing. So you can find me on most social media as Mr. Scott Free.
So good to see
you. Now we know it's 40% asshole, and that's okay.
A little higher.
Thank you, everyone, for being here. And thanks, everyone, for listening. It's such a joy to put these together. I had so much fun today. My final thoughts on Jamie. I want to write 3 Jamie stories if I ever get the opportunity. One of them is the early Charles Xavier story that talks about Jamie's dad working at the nuclear plant and, like, Professor X being involved. There's something really juicy there. Second one I'm really interested in writing is, like, a story about Jamie working at Muir Island in, like, the early days. There's so much with, like, Moira and that early Muir Island crew that I think is so interesting. If I was going to write a modern Jamie story, and this would be a funny Jamie story, but let's say I get an annual and it's all Jamie. Jamie opens, like, the book opens with Jamie having completely lost his mutant power. And it's a joyful story, but it's one where he now has to live in his own skin as one person who can't dupe anymore. And, like, his responsibilities as, like, a dad, but there's, like, still better versions of him living out there. So, you know, like, he can fight dupes, but he can no longer dupe. I think that would be a really interesting story to write. I like this character. He's not my favorite, but I like him a lot. I'm really interested. I'm going to be chewing on these ideas the rest of the evening. You can follow the show, @GrayMalkin_Lane on Instagram most easily. After this episode, we'll be launching into Pride Month on Gray Malkin Lane. So then this over on the Patreon, we're doing queer characters all month, and we're going to open June by discussing the character Jonas Gray Malkin, who is a queer X-Men, and I get the creator of Gray Malkin, Mark Guggenheim, joining me for that episode. I'm very excited. We have some really fun plans on the Patreon all summer. June, please watch for the trial of Heather Douglas or Moondragon, which I'm so excited about. It's going to be really fun. In July, watch for the trial of Pyotr Rasputin or Colossus. We're doing a whole Colossus month on the show in July. Thank you, everybody, for listening. Thank you to my incredible friends in this jury for joining me today. We will see you all back here next time on Gray Malkin Lane. Thank you for listening to Gray Malkin Lane. We hope you are enjoying this podcast. Gray Malkin Lane is produced and recorded in Salt Lake City, Utah, with music and editing done by my husband, Michael Bell, and promo art done by the incredible Seth Martell. Look for us on Patreon, where we are releasing weekly episodes about obscure characters and facts. It's a great way to participate with the podcast for only just a couple of dollars a month, and it helps support what we are doing here. Also, the best way you could help Gray Malkin Lane is by sharing and liking and subscribing, but also please leave us a review wherever you listen to your podcasts. We'll see you back here next time on Gray Malkin Lane.